This episode is presented by Wild CBD. Wild produces the best tasting edibles on the market using real fruit and all natural flavoring. With flavors inspired by the Pacific Northwest, high quality ingredients, real fruit, and consistent dosing, Wild has become one of the leading cannabis edible producers in the country. Wild's new CBD line currently offers real fruit infused gummies in blackberry, huckleberry, lemon, and raspberry, and CBD infused sparkling water in raspberry, lemon, blackberry, and blood orange. Each gummy is dosed with 25 milligrams of CBD and can be purchased in a bottle of 10 or 20. Wild CBD is offering our listeners 30% off their next purchase from wildcbd.com. That's WYLDCBD.com by using the code POD, P-O-D. That's code POD for 30% off your next purchase. Wild CBD products are intended only for use by individuals aged 18 and older. Wild CBD products should only be consumed as directed on the label and should not be used if you are pregnant or breastfeeding. All Wild CBD products are made with ingredients containing 0% THC. Consult with a health professional prior to using Wild CBD in combination with any medications or other dietary supplements.
John, it's James. Warm up the tires and turn up the engine, because it's time to start the Outlap F1 podcast. From the Sports Talk Garage Network studio in Chicago to the best fans from around the world, join us every week for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 37 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's Andy. I'm along with John. How we doing on this blackout Wednesday? Are we pumped for our holiday weirdo weekend?
Yeah, I mean, of all the years to have a Thanksgiving, man, it's going to be a unique time. Doing a little social distancing myself. It's going to be pretty small on my end. Just a very, you know, immediate family getting together tomorrow, but looking forward to it. You know, obviously from a Thanksgiving standpoint, I mean, It's hard to not be thankful for, you know, health, even though it's been a wild year for myself, but, you know, it could always be worse. And then, you know, it's been a blessing to see this show grow. We just hit over 10,000 downloads for the season. So it's been a pretty kick-ass year for the podcast, just to grow and have, I mean, our motto has kind of always just been to have fun with it and get to know each other and just have a good time talking about F1, and the rest will take care of itself. So I'm thankful that we've gotten to interact and to meet so many different people. It's just been a real blessing in a year that's been not so fun.
Yeah, I mean, I would totally echo that. I mean, in a year that had, you know, its own set of problems, this F1 season has been kind of a godsend. Being able to get on here with you guys has been actually a ton of fun in a year that has just not been very fun at all. So, you know, I look forward to, I totally look forward to these things when we do them, putting everything together. It's work, but it's fun work. And, you know, for anybody who needs something like that, go find something like this. Cause it's going to do you some good. But anyway, unfortunately,
I was just saying, in a year when there's not a whole lot to look forward to, it's nice to have your midweek and your Sunday night recordings. And like you said, it is a lot of work. We put a lot of hours into prep for these shows, and, you know, especially on race days, the agenda is, you know, massive, and trying to just get everything in order and, you know, get the talking points and make sure we cover all the hot stuff. But you know, it's a hell of a good time. So what's the old saying? You know, you do something you love, you never work a day in your life. So
That is very true. Unfortunately, we are in a bit of the missing man formation again tonight. Our buddy James looks like he's kind of tied up with some work stuff, so we're just gonna let him deal with that tonight, and hope that he'll be able to make not sure if he's gonna be able to make our Sunday recording, but if he does, we obviously want him to join us if he can. And if he won't, then he'll be on the next one, as he is prone to do. Just as a reminder, you can always find our show on Twitter, Instagram, and now on Reddit as well. Are we keeping out of Reddit jail? Last I checked.
Yeah, at the moment, I've been behaving myself, trying to finish 2020 on a high note and stay out of Reddit jail. So, yeah, we've been getting on there. We've also been talking about getting on Discord for some race day stuff. So stay tuned to that. It's something we're kind of throwing around, asking for it, to kind of have some mid-race chatter going on our channel. It's a lot of work, and you know, especially on the for you know us U.S. folks, some of these races are at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, as we saw last a week or so ago. But something worth thinking about. If you're interested in, let you know, shoot us a DM, give us a hell yeah or a thumbs up or whatever. Let us know that's something you're interested in, and we may pursue something like that. So, but yeah, at the moment we are out of jail on all of our social media platforms, but. You know, knock on wood.
So that is Twitter, Instagram, and of course Reddit. And you can find it at Outlap F1 Podcast. You can email the show as always at our email address at chatnow@outlapf1.com. You can also find us on the website at www.outlapf1.com, where you can find our very talented blogger, Sophie Middleton, who's written a whole bunch of pieces on her first year watching Formula One and her reactions to it. And as always, you can feel free to support the pod by going to our website and looking up our support the pod page. $1, $2, a dime. If you're so inclined, we'd be super grateful. If you can't, I totally get it. It's the holiday season. You got money going all over the place. Give us a 5-star review on any of your favorite podcast apps. That's pretty much like gold to us in the podcasting world. So we would be super appreciative of that as well. And if anything we discuss in this episode or any other episode for that matter gets you a little confused and you're not quite sure what we're talking about, feel free to check out our F1 for Beginners episode. That is season 2, episode 10, where we take you soup to nuts, everything around the sport that we love and love to talk about. It's all there for you. You will be more knowledgeable than the fan next to you if you listen to that. Just a reminder, our partnership with the good folks at Manscaped continues. We are still able to bring you 20% off and free shipping with our code OUTLAP. That is code OUTLAP with your purchase. Feel free to take advantage of it while it lasts. John, we had some news break over the course of the last couple of weeks, and the biggest story involves Lewis Hamilton and a knighthood.
Dude, I am so freaking stoked about this. It's something that I know myself, and I think all Lewis Hamilton fans have kind of been wondering for a long time, you know, is it going to happen? Honestly, it's kind of been a little awkward that it hasn't happened yet, just with so much that he's done for the sport. Obviously, a true representative of his country, and, you know, it's not shy to give his national pride for the country. And so, you know, it's a shame that it took this long, but I am hell excited that it sounds like it's actually going to happen. Yeah, either what late this year, or early next year, something like
that.
Yeah,
I think next time they were slated to do it, the article I initially read said early 2021.
Okay, I'll take it. You know, and I was looking through some of the history of motorsports, you know, figures that have been knighted. It hasn't actually been that many, so. The first one was Sir Henry Seagrave. I hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. He was knighted in 1929, famous for multiple land speed records. He was the first person to ever drive 200 miles per hour in a land vehicle in the early 1900s. So, damn. I can only imagine how scary that had to have been. Unfortunately, he did pass away shortly thereafter in 1930 after setting his last land speed record. So, you know, it's one of those things where I truly believe he probably passed doing something
I was going to say, I would hope that he passed doing something he loved, going very, very fast.
The next one was Sir Malcolm Campbell. He was knighted in 1931. He also had multiple land speed records. And his last one he set was in 1935, where he averaged 301.337 miles per hour at the Bonneville Salt Flats. Can you imagine in 1935 in a vehicle that averages 301? He did that across two passes too to break a land speed record that day. So
that thing had to be a gas can on wheels. I mean, pretty much. Just so you look at those cars from back then and you just wonder how, but it's amazing engineering. This is how we get to where we are today is with guys like this.
Next one was Sir Jack Brabham. Obviously 1978, multiple world championships. His story kind of speaks for itself. Moving on, you've got Sir Frank Williams in 1999. Again, you know, Formula One racer, founder of Williams F1. The kind of history again tells itself. He was in 1999 when he was knighted. The next one is very, very shortly thereafter. Sir Stirling Moss. perhaps the greatest driver to never win a championship, Mr. Formula One, in my opinion. He was in 2000. Again, just an absolutely incredible driver, a true representative of the country. Then we had a nice little string here. 2001, we had Sir Jackie Stewart, again, three-time world champion. The stats speak for itself. And so he was knighted. And then the last one was Sir Patrick Head, which was in 2015. Obviously, he had a wealth of experience in Formula One, helped co-found Williams F1. So pretty cool. And now it looks like in 2021, we're going to add to that list finally with the seven-time world champion that is Lewis Hamilton. So I'm pretty damn stoked about it, man. I'm like a kid in a candy store. I can't wait to see this. Hopefully I can catch some live footage of it when it happens.
Yeah, I think he's totally, totally deserving of this. It seemed like from the article that I read that one of the hangups has been, you know, whether or not he was paying the right amount of tax. And I guess Her Majesty yeah. Revenue and Customs is then satisfied that he's paid enough of his taxes back to the motherland to enable him to get it. But I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, that's kind of a half reason to keep him out of it, but it's not a real reason. I mean, the guy does more charity work than we'll probably ever know. That's just true with a lot of athletes. They tend to do things kind of, you know, they have their public faces stuff. Obviously, we've heard of the stuff with the Hamilton Commission and all that type of stuff. But I'm sure that there's a lot of efforts that he's doing that are kind of behind the scenes that he doesn't necessarily want out in the public spotlight. So you could have a much worse role model in your life than this guy. And I think he's worth and he's worthy of a knighthood. It's seven-time world champion. Whether you want to give it to the car or half give it to him. I mean, I think the last race in Turkey, you saw why he's as good as he is. Because he was able to make that car do things that nobody else could do. So, you know, for all of those above reasons, I'm supportive of this. I'm happy for him. It's a guy who I've followed since, you know, basically 2007 when he first came back in. So,
yeah, same here.
You know, it's good to see hard work pay off. He's worthy of it. Congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he could be a nine-time world champion if it wasn't for a couple of minor little things here and there. Definitely. Yeah, Lewis Hamilton is I think, that driver of all, especially here in the States, that, you know, we talk about all the time, you know, the popularity here, it's growing, and it's growing tremendously here, but it's still nowhere remotely close to, you know, some of the other sports here in the States, so, you know, popularity-wise.
Did you get a chance to? I was going to ask. Did you get a chance to see some of his interview with Stephen Colbert?
No, I had that on my watch list. It's been a insane week of work. It's been about Wednesday, and I think I've already hit my OT. If I was too bad, I'm not an hourly employee because I'd be getting racking in the OT this week. So no, I'm looking forward to that. I saw it.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
and saved
if you get a chance, check that out. It's about the full one and even some of it that didn't necessarily air. It's about 15 minutes. It's actually a really good interview. And it was good to see Formula One being, again, somewhere outside of just the sport, outside of the sports world, kind of in the entertainment world. It's good to see him kind of making the rounds as a world champion is able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as a driver who spends a lot of time here in the States, if there's anyone that a non-Formula fan is going to know a name of when it comes to current drivers, it's going to be Lewis Hamilton. Definitely case in point. I was getting texts from multiple people last Sunday night who I know for a fact know very, very, very little about Formula One, other than the fact that they know I do a podcast talking about Lewis Hamilton winning a championship. So I was glad to share everything I knew about my driver there. So it was good times.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. So we're going to move on to our next story, and that is that, unfortunately, James isn't here to react to this because I would love to see his face when I read this.
Hashtag fire, but not
yeah. Unfortunately, hashtag fire Mattia, he's back. We'll be back on the pit wall for both this race and the back-to-back Bahrain at the Sakhir Grand Prix. Looks like he's going to be back on the pit wall, so it's going to be interesting to see if we have some more interesting strategy calls for Ferrari. They're kind of on the outskirts of this battle for third place, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what they can do in a track that, you know, as we're going to talk about, this is kind of back to normal service for a lot of these teams. You know, it's a track that they all know very well. So it'll be interesting to see what they come out with strategy wise over the course of the weekend.
Yeah. On a track that is pretty power hungry and pretty thirsty on engines. You know, obviously they had great success last year until it kind of blew up for unfortunately Leclerc. Obviously a lot came out since then about the possible, you know, the legality issues of that particular motor. But on a year where Ferrari's on their back foot, my semi-intelligence would tell me that this might be a race where they struggle at. Perhaps it'll surprise all of us. I know I read an article this week where he was talking about that they will start their 2022 development in early January of this coming year. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what their focus is going into next season. But he was very straight up. He said, you know, championships are not in our window, but we truly believe that next year we should be able to be competing on a routine basis for podiums. So high aspirations from the boys in red. James has got to be happy to hear that. You know, will they have it next year? I don't know. We'll find out. But it's going to be interesting that on a track where, you know, they need a lot of power. We know the Ferrari cars are significantly down on power this year. You know, will they have any chance at all in being in even the top five?
Well, I just think when you talk about even next year, what salivates me or gets me going as an F1 fan, we could have five potential teams vying for that P3 spot, because you really have to now put AlphaTauri into that mix, you know, considering if they can be consistent throughout the year. You would think Ferrari coming back would have a shot at it. We've got the three teams that are going now in McLaren, Renault, and Racing Point. So beyond necessarily the top two, I think that battle for third, even this year, is going to be where it's at. But, I mean, even going into next year, I would imagine that that's going to be super, super tight the whole way through. So it's good to see if they can bounce back a little bit more. We'll have to see kind of how their pace is, you know, when they show up for Friday practice, if they're there or if they're way off. That'll be kind of telling, but looks like we're going to have some really good competition, even in what's supposed to be kind of a lame duck year next year.
Yeah, I mean, even in a year where, you know, we wrapped up a Constructors' Championship with what, like five races to go, obviously a Drivers' Championship with what, three to go. You know, this has actually probably been the most competitive year overall since, what, like 2012?
We've had
when you talk about race wins and different people on the podium.
Yeah, there's been more people on the podium this year. The last, I think there were like 10 or 12 different drivers on the podium or something this year. I may be getting that number confused, but I know this was the year with the most amount of drivers on the podium since 2012. So let that kind of sink in. You know, as much as we're complaining about Mercedes dominance and everything else, we've seen some really good competition, and we've seen some what I thought were some really good races this year as well. So, you know, you take kind of the chalk in some instances, and then you get some craziness in some others. So, you know, it's been an interesting mix, and hopefully next year is kind of more of the same. And what the hope is that, you know, you can get a team like a Red Bull who can maybe take another step and hopefully challenge the Mercedes a little bit, so it's not just 1-2 and then kind of see where things go. That's all we're looking for, I think, for a show.
Yeah, I'm just going based on memory here, but I mean, when I look back at this season, and God, it's been a long season since that first race was postponed way back in March. I mean, it feels like basically half the teams have had like both their drivers on the podium at some point. So, I mean, you do the math, that's 10 drivers right there. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a hell of a season. It's been a lot of fun. It's been crazy. It's been unique, obviously, and a lot of challenges with, you know, everything going on in the world. But it's definitely been a shining light in an otherwise gleep year. So hopefully next year we'll prove more of the same.
Yeah. And I have no reason to think that it's not going to. So I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving on, this is a story that kind of broke actually last week, but obviously because it was a week off for us, we didn't necessarily do a recording, but a story we wanted to fit in here. Aston Martin and Mercedes are going to, for the first time, I think in like 10 plus years, it's not going to be full Mercedes doing the safety car duties in 2021. The article I read about it seems to indicate that it's really more of a cost spreading out measure between the two manufacturers. But the way that and it seems this will sound kind of odd, but the more I think about it, I think this is the beginning of a major power shift in the sport. We're kind of seeing the Lawrence Stroll influence over Aston Martin getting the board, Aston Martin having Mercedes having an ownership in Aston Martin. I'm wondering if this is the beginning of kind of the tea leaves turning away from Mercedes in and of itself to a Mercedes / Aston Martin power structure in the sport. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I mean, we've obviously the two companies have had a partnership for a long, long time. You know, Aston being a company that doesn't develop their own engines. I mean, their high-end cars have been using Mercedes engines for quite some time. You know, Mercedes AMG motors. I've heard it's the Vantage that's perhaps coming in next year. I think that'd be badass. It's a good-looking vehicle. It sounds pretty damn good as well. So. Unfortunately, both the safety cars will probably sound better than the Formula One cars on track, but that's a whole other issue for another day. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I think you're onto a good point there. I mean, we've seen this shift, and you know, there's been this rumor about Mercedes pulling out and Ineos, you know, becoming Ineos F1, you know, and Mercedes kind of taking a step back and being more of an engine manufacturer. We know kind of where things are going to land as far as constructors go and who's going to be providing motors next year and moving forward. So, yeah, I you know, we've got another article here in a minute about 2026 engines, which is the next proposal. And Toto Wolff has been very vocal about that, which kind of plays into your theory here. You know, you've got there's been rumors about Toto going to Aston and what's going to happen there. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. You know, Aston is obviously – you know, a brand that every, you know, even non-car people instantly know that brand. It's truly iconic around the world. So I definitely don't see this as a bad thing. And I think it's cool to kind of shake it up. It looks like their Mercedes AMG powered SUV will be the medical car for those particular races. I think Mercedes is going to get 13 rounds next year, and with Aston getting the remainder, I'm not sure, you know, I haven't actually seen the breakdown of what's, you know, what races are doing what, but you know, I think it's cool. I'm sure the other teams are happy that there's a shift and that everything's not Mercedes driven. We all know that people have been saying that Mercedes has definitely, you know, gotten the love from everything when it comes to the past 6-7 years. So yeah, I think it's a cool shift, and I think you may be on to something, Andy.
Well, maybe. And then my other question is, do you think the Aston Martin safety car will go fast enough for Lewis Hamilton?
You know, if he bitches and moans about the Mercedes one, I think he's going to ramp it up even further when there's another brand. Because now he's not going to have, you know, someone give him a phone call on Monday morning and saying, like, hey, can you stop talking shit about our fastest car that we make, you know, not being fast enough. So now that it's another brand, I think it's just going to unleash the full hatred down there, unless there's some plan for 2022 or something to where you've got a, you know, Sebastian Vettel and a Lewis Hamilton for a swan song on both.
Well,
drivers.
I've seen interviews with the safety car driver Burt Mylander, and, yeah, and he said by far the one who is the hardest on him is when Lewis is right behind him. You know, everybody else he feels kind of relaxed and can just do his thing, but when he knows when Lewis is behind him, he's got to be gunning it the whole time.
Yeah, he's pushing. Lewis Hamilton, as much hate as he gets, when I see him behind a safety car, it reminds me every single time of Dale Earnhardt Sr. behind the pace car in a NASCAR race. I mean, Dale would literally go up and nudge the guy, bump him, you know, especially if he had a little debris in the front. Yeah, that's what he's for. Get that debris off there. Just give him a little nudge, a little rub, tell him to speed up. So it definitely reminds me of that, you know, two of the best in their sports, and definitely giving hell to the pace car / safety car drivers in their eras.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, we'll have to see kind of how this goes, and we'll kind of keep our eyes on the tea leaves and see if we can start to see, you know, some gears turning about, you know, maybe the power shift in F1. And it's interesting also for me that Ferrari doesn't seem to be a part of it, which is also kind of would also be a major shift.
Yeah, I mean, I totally wouldn't mind body being a safety car for a weekend. I you know, I've seen that car in person at Mugello, and I mean, it's obviously a work of art, so it wouldn't pain me to see that even as a non-Ferrari guy. But is there going to be any change in safety car driver with the shift, or is Bert going to handle both? Do we know?
As far as I know, I think it's him, unless they find somebody else, and it would have to be someone with a similar skill set. He's a rally car driver or something like that. I don't know enough about Aston Martin sports cars to know kind of who would be a potential for that, but I would assume it would be the same driver.
Well, maybe that would be Lewis's retirement plan. He's when he does call it, he's going to kick Bird out and say, "Hey, I got it for a while, boy." We'll see if he can do any better.
Very true.
Might be the first time you see the safety car drifting to the corners.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So next story kind of on our rundown. We talked in I think our last race preview about the calendar coming out and Saudi Arabia being added to the calendar, and the kind of controversy with the kind of geopolitical climate that it's kind of coming in with. They've come out and kind of tried to head that criticism off at the pass, and they're insisting that they're not sports washing is the term that they use by hosting F1. You know, they would prefer that people judge the country after they come to the country. And the article I read that seems to cite Formula E kind of changed their opinion, and they're actually having now an all electric night race in Saudi Arabia, I think, slated for next year. So, you know, that's a big shift. We've had Dakar rallies being now held in Saudi Arabia. So it's interesting that, you know,
Extreme E is going to be there next year. The all electric, off-roading vehicles.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a lot going on there.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily fully in agreement with that, but I would like to see is let's give it a shot. Let's see where it goes. You know, it's their chance to appear on a world stage. And they're going to have to live up to a standard that maybe they're not used to doing. But, you know, if you want to be on the world stage, you can't sit in the spotlight and be mad at the heat of it at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. Shortly after we recorded last week, so I thought this article, the timing of it was interesting that you and I had just talked about this, really not knowing that this was going to be more of a story when we talked about it. It was just kind of giving our thoughts on, you know, obviously there's humanitarian and geopolitical issues in that country. And you and I kind of addressed that head on a couple of weeks ago and sort of gave our thoughts on the matter. But it was interesting that shortly after we recorded a couple of weeks ago, I got a survey from Formula One asking, you know, point blank, what are my thoughts? And so, to my surprise, Formula One did not they did not shy away from the issues. They went direct in their question directly at what is my views on a race being in there, given the humanitarian issues and the human rights concerns in the country. There was a whole plethora of questions related directly to Saudi Arabia and the image, asking if I'd be willing to travel there, you know, and if there was, and even going as far as, you know, if this was a normal year, non-COVID related, would I be interested in traveling there in the future for a race? So they really are interested in kind of seeing what Formula One fans feel about the race. You know, would we ever go there? What's the attendance looks like? And then there was also kind of at the end of the survey, some shifts about how I feel about night races and do I feel like there should be more. Obviously I don't want to oversaturate night races, but I personally love them. I've loved them in pretty much every form of motorsports that there has ever been. Just something about the glowing brakes and the sparks flying that it's just, if that doesn't get your blood flowing, I don't know what will. So, you know, definitely don't want every race to be a night race. You don't want to, you know, take away from the novelty and the specialty of a night race, but, you know, that and we talked about it as well. It's kind of the timing was interesting that you and I just talked about how, you know, at least it's going to be a night race. It's going to be cool as hell to see, hopefully. We kind of talked about track design. But F1 is certainly interested in getting viewers' thoughts on the matter. So I think that's cool that they're not shying away from the issues here.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that they have a TV, it works, and they know how to watch it. Because, you know, they can tell that they've kind of dipped into a little bit of controversy here. And then to me, that's something that we wouldn't have seen. This would have normally been, you know, in the old era, a Bernie Ecclestone deal. You know, we would have gone there and that would have been it. And that would have been the end of the discussion. So at least they're willing to have some give and take. Yeah, they're going to be on the calendar probably for the next few years. But this may be, you know, it's going to be on, I think, Saudi Arabia to put its best foot forward and address on the world stage those issues that we talked about last time. So, you know, to me, more inclusion in the world, I think, is overall a good thing. So that's why I'm going to root not necessarily for Saudi Arabia, but for the event itself to go well, just so that we can have more inclusion. Because, you know, ultimately, there's a part of the world that we're excluding from everything. And I don't know that that's necessarily right.
Yeah.
All right, so we already kind of alluded to this, but we'll get back to it was an article in motorsport.com that Toto Wolff was warning about as we're talking about these 2026 engine rules, and it seems like we just agreed on the 2022 engine rules. but now we're going to talk about the next iteration of this, and Toto Wolff has been very vocal in saying F1 should not repeat the same mistakes with respect to those engine rules. Obviously, if you followed the sport since 2014, we've had the same complaints about these hybrids. They're very costly. They're super complicated. One tiny part goes wrong, the whole thing shuts down. You know, you've got drivers with 30 submenus trying to navigate engineering instructions while doing 200 miles an hour. It's just, it's gotten a little nuts. So to me, you know, I would say some sort of a hybrid fuel or an alternative fuel. But whatever we decide, for the love of God, make these loud. The sound, it is such a vital thing for anyone who's been a fan of the sport prior to this era. They haven't quite got it back to that level. They've gotten better over the years, but there is nothing like a naturally aspirated, high-pitched, even if it's just a V8, screaming by you down the straight of a racetrack. I can't, if you've never had that experience, I welcome you to Google some of that and try to have that, because it's an element of F1 as from a fan's perspective that right now I think is just missing. And I'm praying to God that when they work this stuff out, they can find a way to bring it back.
Yeah, I mean, when you can go to a Formula One race and not even, I mean, I'm not a doctor here, so disclaimer, you do what you do, Phil is best, but when you can, you know, in my opinion, as a non-medical professional, you can go to a race and not wear hearing protection and be just fine. That is not cool. And as someone who unfortunately missed the era of Formula One of seeing the V12s or even the V8, you know, with the KERS, like I would gladly take a V8 KERS back again. I love that era of Formula One car. As someone who has only gotten to see them doing like parade laps and stuff and never in like a full on just ripping it through the corner with a pack of 20 cars, I want to see that. You watch the videos. I'm currently watching Deanna from the Relapse podcast / YouTube channel now and kind of, you know, looking back at the 70s and 80s and kind of these historic races and hearing these cars. I mean, they're unbelievable. They just, it literally gives you chills. I agree. We got to get back to that. And as someone who drives an electric car, that being a Tesla and being a big Tesla guy, and as it's funny though, the people who go to Formula E races have actually said that they actually believe the Formula E races are louder than Formula One races because the electric motor whine is actually louder. How is that possible? I have no idea. It's not where it should be. So I completely agree with you. I want to hear some screaming. I want ear piercing. I need 3 earplugs in at one time kind of deal when I go to COTA in a few years. So that's the plan. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. Obviously, Formula E, you know, the talks that we've talked about this in the past on the show, you know, electric and or like hydrogen is probably the future of you know, vehicles in general. We know that Formula E has a copyright on the or a patent on the full electric vehicles for like the next, I don't know, 50 years or some god awful number.
Yeah, it's some ridiculous.
So we know that it won't be that. So it's got to be either hybrids. My guess is probably gonna be hybrid with like perhaps a hydrogen electric mix. I think that would be cool as hell if they could safely do that. But yeah, man, open it up. Give us some big ass exhaust pipes and let. We need RPMs back. I think that's the thing. Like, yeah. we used to be pegging out 20,000 RPMs. Now we're pegging at 12 if we're lucky. So we need that those screaming motors again. I agree with you, man.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it is something visceral, and I've always said this. F1 should resonate, like, in your chest and in your gut. And if it's not doing that, it, you know, there's it's an element that's missing. And I really hope they bring it back. I hope they take their time. I don't want them to rush into something. They've got 5 years to hammer this out. The technology could change. You know, there could be some major breakthrough with the safety of a hydrogen fuel cell that makes it a heck of a lot safer than what it is now. We know F1 wants to be carbon neutral. I totally understand that. That's the way the planet has to go that way.
Absolutely.
I'm not asking them to, you know, to take my Dodge Charger engine and put that in an F1 car and go, you know, screaming around the racetrack anymore. It's not fuel efficient. I get it. But at the same time, we just make it visceral again. Give the car guys and the car gals out there something to really, really look forward to. I mean, it's amazing to watch the cars glide and be as quiet as they are. I mean, it's its own weird way that's fascinating. But give me, like I said, give me the screaming engine. Let me feel it. Let me need my super awesome ear savers that I bought way back in 2012 again.
Exactly. I guess the only thing that would be close to me in comparison is I remember several years back I went to the Charlotte drag race and they had the 4 wide NHRA, and to see 4 top fuel dragsters going down the track at the same time, that physically hurt to be standing. I was helping a company out that was doing some sponsorship, so I was blessed to be right down by the cars, and I literally physically hurt me to be that close. Maybe not quite that loud, but it's, you know, certainly maybe up in that degree. I want to feel it like you're talking about. I want to know that 100%, you know, from 4 miles away, I want to be able to hear those popping noises when they're going through gear changes. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we got to do something.
All right. So we're going to drop our green flag and we're going to get into this race weekend, which is our first of 2 at the Bahrain International Circuit. John, tell us about our track facts that are always brought to us by Pirelli Motorsport.
Yeah, so this week we're at the Bahrain International Circuit, located in Sakhir, Bahrain. 57 laps on the board for Sunday morning, Sunday night local time. Track length is 3.362 miles, which comes out to 5.412 kilometers. 15 turns on the board. Pirelli's tire selection this week is C2, C3, and C4. So we're going right down the middle of the pipeline as far as hardness and durability on the track, on the tires. Track characteristics this week, we've got a 4 out of 5 on traction, a 4 out of 5 on 3 out of 5 on tire stress, a 3 out of 5 on lateral load, a 4 out of 5 on asphalt grip, a 5 out of 5 on asphalt abrasion, and a 2 out of 5 on downforce. So this track will bring a unique challenge to all the drivers, and that's why I think it's honestly a fan favorite of, I know, the drivers and certainly many of the fans. This track has put on some really, really good racing over the years, so we should be in for a treat come someday. Qualifying lap record is from the, as I mentioned earlier, the possible, maybe not completely legal, Charles Leclerc's Ferrari at a 127.866. thankfully James isn't here tonight to complain or to rebuke that claim, so I'll just go with it. The race lap record, interesting enough, goes all the way back to 2005. We got Pedro de la Rosa, Mr. PDR over there with a 131.447. So interesting that of all the improvements, it's going back to the 2004-2005 range for these track records. Pretty cool. Most wins of all time, it actually goes to Sebastian Vettel with 4, Hamilton and Alonso are at 3, and then Felipe Massa with 2. So we've got really some of the best of the sport of all time, especially this generation, right there with race wins. Most constructor wins, James will be happy about this. Ferrari at 6, no surprise. Mercedes at 4, and Renault Red Bull with 2. So pretty cool in that regard. Andy, what is this circuit?
So this is going to be the standard Bahrain Grand Prix circuit. Next weekend, we will start previewing the outer ring of the Bahrain circuit, which will be the secure Grand Prix. But for this race, this is the normal layout that we're used to. Every year they've used this layout, other than 2010 when they actually used the full 6.3-kilometer endurance circuit. But this is it's known as a track that usually provides some great racing, great overtaking. It's crowned by the tight downhill off camber turn 10 and the fast run through its turn 12. And like we said, it'll be this iteration for this weekend, and then the outer ring, which I think that race is going to be absolute craziness. I'm so looking forward to that even next weekend at that outer ring, because it's basically the F1 equivalent of an oval, so it's really going to be fun to watch. Weather for this weekend's race, there was some talk, and I couldn't believe this when I actually looked this up on Sunday.
Don't say
there was some chances of rain in the middle of the desert.
It does rain in the desert.
That's true.
I know that most people don't think that, but it does happen.
But it looks like as we've gotten closer to race weekend, that chance has come down. Qualifying looks to be 81 degrees in the sunlight, dropping obviously after the sun sets into the 70s with a 20% chance of rain. The race itself looks like, again, going to be 81 degrees in the sunlight. Again, as we transition from sunlight to darkness, that will drop, but with a 10% chance of rain. So looking like it's going to be dry, but of course there might be an odd shower just to prove me wrong.
Yeah, when I look at the track map, I mean, this is a track that I've loved for years and years, and it's funny, of all the tracks that I feel like I've started to semi-master when it comes to like the Formula One games and iRacings and things of that nature, this track, the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, basically section, is bites you in the ass like you would not believe. I mean, it's so tight through 5, 6, 7, and then you've got like going up, you've got that tight, like almost 90 degree in 8, going up the hill into 9, and then off camber in a heavy braking zone down into 10 with a 90 degree left. I mean, it's a beautifully designed track. You've got a lot of, like you said, a lot of overtaking opportunities, and you've got a lot of places where, you know, it comes down to, you know, drivers making mistakes, and it definitely will push you to that. So I love this layout, and the fact that it's under lights is, yeah, again, like I said earlier, just an added bonus. So.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, you'll see kind of as we transition from light to dark, you'll see kind of, again, kind of as we almost saw a bit with the Turkish Grand Prix, certain cars being more dominant in the higher temperatures, and then certain cars becoming more dominant as the sun sets and sets up for lower temperatures. It's also a very, what they call a rear limited circuit. So the focus on the tires for this race is not necessarily going to be the fronts. It's going to be the rear tires. So teams that can keep their rear tires in the operating window the longest are apt to do the best here. So it's going to be really interesting to see which cars come in and come out of that window as we go throughout the race.
Yeah, because again, going back to the track, Mac, you have basically like 6 corners where you're at low speed and accelerating hard off the corner. And yeah, I mean, you will chew through a set of rear tires like you would not believe. So it'll be really interesting to see who can set up and who can be nice and gentle on the throttle coming out. Will spin is definitely not your friend at this track, and certainly something that they'll be battling for. for all 57 laps for sure.
Yeah, and it also to note, this is a track that everyone's familiar with. So I mean, it's we kind of now go back into the realm of the known, and it's a surface that they know, and it's a predictable surface. So hopefully that shouldn't be a major talking point, unless if it gets wet. but it should be relatively predictable. But again, it's going to come down to the engineering, the setup, the car setup work, the simulator work. So I'm going to be super important going into this weekend.
Absolutely.
So our historical expert, Deanna, has done a wonderful synopsis, as she is apt to do for us, and we thank her for it, of one of my personal favorite races of the turbo hybrid era is actually the race that she's talking about, and that's the 2014 Bahrain Grand Prix. This was, just to kind of put a little primer on it, this was really, I think, the first time the turbo hybrids actually really put on a really good show that year. The first couple of races were really more about engine failures and not enough cars necessarily being on the grid. I remember Australia, I think they started with like 12 cars or something. It was really bad. This was a really awesome show that the two Mercedes drivers put on. But enough of hearing me talk about it. I'm going to give the floor to our expert, Deanna. Take it away.
Hi, this is Deanna from Relapped. Welcome back to my segment. Today, I'm covering the 2014 Bahrain Grand Prix. I considered doing 2019, but it was still recent, and all you need to know from that is that Charles got an early taste of the 2020 Ferrari engine at the end of that race. So, 2014, first year of the hybrid era in the third round of the season, and the 900th F1 Grand Prix in history. It's the 10th running at this circuit, and it's the first night race in Bahrain in celebration. In qualifying, Rosberg took pole, followed by his teammate Hamilton. Ricciardo came in third for Red Bull, but at the race in Malaysia, the prior race, he had an unsafe release and had a 10-place grid penalty, putting him in 13th. He was followed by Bottas for Williams, Perez for Force India, Raikkonen for Ferrari, Button for McLaren, Massa for Williams, Magnussen for McLaren, and Alonso for Ferrari rounded out the top 10. But because of Ricciardo's grid place penalty, Vettel would be promoted to that 10th place grid spot. All right, and for this race, we're going 57 laps around the Bahrain International Circuit. Lewis got the jump on Rosberg and led into the first corner, but Rosberg came back around him on the outside, although Lewis was able to hold on to the lead. Behind him, Massa rocketed from 8th to 3rd. Down the grid, on the first lap, Maldonado and Vern collided, with Vern over team radio saying, "This guy is trying to kill me," and after about 3 laps, Lewis had pulled out of DRS range from Rosberg. Mercedes team are on the radio signaling they are changing from a planned 3-stop to a 2-stop. And after about 7 laps, the running order is Hamilton, Rosberg, Massa, Perez, and Bottas. That is until Perez closes the gap to Massa, tries to get past, but Massa cuts back on him, holds on for a moment before Perez is able to squeeze past. Massa tries to come back, but locks up and puts Perez in that final podium spot. Elsewhere on the track, Bianchi bashes into the side of Seidel and gets a drive-through penalty. Vettel saying his DRS isn't working, but it actually does come back later. And now it's time for the first round of pit stops. In the pits, Hulk undercuts his teammate Perez, while Bottas undercuts Massa. The two works Mercedes are still running long out front, but it is an all-Mercedes-powered top six, with Hamilton and Rosberg followed by Bottas, Massa, Hulk, and Perez. But on lap 18, Rosberg finally gets back within range of Hamilton, gets DRS, and tries to go up the inside at turn one. Hamilton cuts back to get ahead, and they just have the slightest of touch between their wheels, with Hamilton staying out front and Rosberg not being happy about the whole situation. Then on the next lap, Rosberg again goes on the inside, this time able to make it stick as Hamilton locks up. Hamilton tries to get him back in the slipstream, but can't get past, but is still pushing and gets past at turn 9 in a great sequence that I highly suggest going up and looking and watching for yourself. But getting ahead of Rosberg at that time was absolutely crucial, because at the end of that lap, he was the leading Mercedes, meaning he was given the favorable strategy and pitted immediately. 2 laps later, Rosberg would pit, and the Mercedes split the strategy, probably trying to keep them on different parts of the track, with Rosberg getting the mediums and Hamilton getting the softs. On the softer compound, Hamilton starts to open up a gap to Rosberg and gets it up to about 6 seconds, but behind them, there's legitimately only a couple seconds between Bottas, Massa, Hülkenberg, and Perez. On lap 25, Bottas is leading this group, but on the oldest tires, having pitted on lap 10, with Perez bringing up the rear of the group with the newest tires, six laps fresher than Bottas's. Bottas is able to hold up this train for a bit. Massa has one look at him, but locks up before he can get past. Bottas pits anyway and releases this train. But now Hülkenberg is all over the back of Massa, and the two battle it out, but as they're doing so, Perez is able to close the gap, gets the best exit out of the turn, and passes his teammate Hülkenberg, and another lap later passes Massa in the same exact spot. A couple corners later, after Perez does that, Hulk makes it past Massa, and Massa pits, coming back out behind his teammate Bottas. Things slow down a bit from there as Hamilton widens the gap to 9 seconds over Rosberg. Ericsson parks it and retires, and suddenly we're on another round of pit stops. Perez is the first to go from third, followed by his teammate, both for their second pit stops. Massa pits for the third time, as does Bottas. And then, after this, the probably most notorious moment of this race, Maldonado pits, and as he's leaving the pits, gets alongside a unsuspecting Gutierrez, rams into the side of him, flips him over. Maldonado gets a stop-go, and we get a safety car. Under the safety car, the order is Hamilton leading Rosberg, Perez, Hülkenberg, Button, Vettel, Ricciardo, Massa, and Bottas. At the restart, Rosberg tries to go around the outside, but Hamilton's able to hold on. Hülkenberg tries to do the same to Perez, but Perez too holds the position. Behind them, Vettel passes Button, and soon too does Ricciardo, with the Red Bulls suddenly finding pace, and eventually the Williams too of Bottas and Massa got past Button. Back up front, Rosberg kept the gap within a second, even while Hamilton was setting the fastest lap. And behind, Perez is building a gap to Hülkenberg. Behind them, Ricciardo gets on the inside of his teammate Vettel. Vettel tries to get in the slipstream and fight back, but Ricciardo holds on as both the Red Bulls are now closing to the Force Indias. Back up front, Nico is able to get about a half a car's length ahead of Hamilton, but Hamilton gets the better exit out of turn one. Rosberg gets back into the slipstream, but while he tries to come back at Hamilton, on the outside, Hamilton pushes him out wide and Nico goes pretty much completely off the track, meaning Hamilton gets the lead. The next lap, Rosberg is still in DRS range, tries to have a go up the inside, but outbreaks himself, letting Lewis through for the lead again, and that would be his last chance to have a look at his teammate. He would keep it within a second for a couple more laps, but Lewis would finally pull it to out of DRS range in the closing laps. Behind them, the only change was Ricciardo got past Hulk for fourth in a great drive from 13th on the grid. And that's the race. One of the earliest sparks in the Hamilton-Rosberg rivalry. Hamilton took the win ahead of Rosberg, and Perez rounded out the podium for Force India's second ever podium. Ricciardo was in fourth, Hülkenberg was in fifth, Vettel in sixth, Massa in seventh, Bottas in eighth, Alonso in ninth, and Raikkonen rounded out the points in 10th. And that about wraps it up for me. So quick update on what I'm doing. I moved over to YouTube now. I'm still watching all of the old races, but I'm posting one every single weekday, giving you some background going into the race, a rundown of quali, a race reaction, and then kind of driver's constructor standing. So please, if you're interested, subscribe, and you can follow me on social media, on Instagram and Twitter at relapped_F1. And I'll be back next time for Abu Dhabi.
Thank you very much, Deanna, for that awesome recap of one of my personal favorite races. John, any significant thoughts? This was a great win for Lewis.
Yeah. Well, first off, just a reminder, you can find Deanna on obviously her podcast, Relap, but also on YouTube now. She just kicked off her YouTube channel. I had an opportunity to watch some of it earlier today in between work meetings. It's really entertaining kind of watching her recap it. She's kind of recording as she's watching the races. So it's a really cool perspective going back and kind of hearing the old audio and, really exciting time. So looking forward to more of that. This is a race that I think will go down, when I think of Lewis Hamilton races, this is definitely got to be near the top of the list. As Deanna mentioned, this was a pure on slugfest, body blows left and right between the two Mercedes drivers, just lap after lap after lap, no team orders. It was like, have at it, boys. The fact that I think they got through that entire race without touching is a miracle. And the fact that they didn't take each other out was purely a miracle. The relationship, I think, was a little bit better between the two in 2014 than perhaps in some of the later years of their battles. Still a lot of mutual friendship and respect between each other at that point. But yeah, I mean, just absolute inches, millimeters, I guess, probably honestly, between, you know, wheel to wheel between these drivers. So, and the fact that, again, under the lights, badass. So definitely go check
it out. Like I said, this is one of my all-time favorites. And the part that always sticks out for me is you can see the distinctive racing lines that each combatant here, like Lewis would take a certain line and Rosberg would take a certain line, and you could see undercutting and overcutting in certain corners. And what made it all work was that for a lot of it, they were on different tire compounds. So, you know, it was Rosberg would have an advantage in certain corners because of the compound he was on, and Hamilton would have certain advantages in other corners as they went around the track based on the compound that he was on. So, I mean, it's a lot of give and take there, like, three, I think, awesome sequences. There's a random safety car in there. You get to see a car. I want to say it was Esteban Gutierrez gets flipped over upside down. And his reaction on the radio was he was fine. And he just goes, "What was that?" So, I mean, it was like the most calm, you know, dude, you just did a 360. And he's just like, "Well, what the hell was that?" So it's a great race. Go check it out. It's one of the few races that I've ever, like, totally found ways to download, not necessarily the most legal way to do it, that I have on one of my computers, because like I said, this is an all-timer. Go check it out. It's totally worth your time. Worst ways, if you're stuck in lockdown over this holiday weekend, check this out. It'll help the time move all that much quicker for you.
Yeah, and the fact that normally we get this race near the beginning of the season, I'm really excited that we're kind of wrapping up here. We've got obviously the traditional layout, like you mentioned. The following week, we've got the, you know, semi quote unquote oval, which kind of looks like a giant square, in my opinion. I mean, we're going to be chewing through some tires, and I don't know if it's just going to be one giant DRS, like four DRS zones or something. It's going to be insane. I'm looking forward to that. And then obviously finishing up with another, you know, a third night race in a row with Abu Dhabi, at the traditional circuit there. So, I think it's a cool way to close out, such a spectacle of a sport that is Formula One. I think closing out, finishing the season under the lights is a cool way to go. So, yeah, if you're bored, if you need to get a getaway from the family that you're visiting this weekend, you need to step away for a couple hours and reset. Definitely go find yourself a feed of this 2014 race.
Yeah, I know it's on F1 TV, and that is totally legal now. Oh, yeah. So go enjoy it the right way.
Buy yourself a month of F1 TV if you haven't, and just
absolutely
get in.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for your partner this holiday season? We have the perfect package for his perfect package. The Perfect Package 3.0 by Manscaped is the number one recommended gift all year long. Inside, you'll find their Lawnmower 3.0, which is the best men's below-the-belt grooming trimmer, which can also be used on any part of the body. Hairy chest or back? Look no further. Hair down there? The Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 is designed to reduce cuts and makes for a smooth trim. This 7,000 RPM trimmer has helped reduce manscaping accidents around the world. In addition, you'll find other liquid formulations inside the Perfect Package, like their Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, Crop Reviver Ball Toner, and Reduced Chafing Boxer Briefs. These formulations are all vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, and paraben-free, so you know your manhood is in good hands. And now you can also check out the new Weed Whacker, which I could not recommend enough for ear, nose, hairs that you just can't seem to get rid of elsewhere otherwise. So you can save 20% off plus free shipping with code OUTLAP at manscaped.com. Once again, that is code OUTLAP, OUTLAP, all one word, on manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping. So give your testies the besties with Manscaped.
Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 37 of the OUTLAP F1 Podcast. It's Andy. I'm along with John. And before we get into our next segment, meet Three Wishes, a high-protein, low-sugar, grain-free breakfast cereal that tastes like the cereals of your childhood, made with modern-day clean ingredients. Three Wishes contains ingredients such as chickpeas, pea protein, and tapioca, a feat of food science that took 2 years of development and comes in four flavors: cocoa, cinnamon, honey, and unsweetened. Three Wishes is a plant-based, gluten-free, certified cereal free from wheat, dairy, soy, oats, corn, rice, and peanuts. With 70% less sugar and as much as 8 times the protein of their decadent counterparts, there's nothing on the shelf quite like it. Right now, Three Wishes is offering our listeners 10% off with code PODCAST10. Head to their website at www.threewishescereal.com to shop and learn more. So we're going to get into our predictions for the weekend. Unfortunately, we were not able to procure a guest predictor for at least this weekend. We've got some lined up in the future. Qualifying last year was Charles Leclerc with a 127.866. John, who's your order and what's your lap time?
So my order, I feel like now that everything's wrapped up with Bottas, he's going to be like, you know what? I got to prove that I really need a seat next year. And that they, you know, don't buy me out of my contract and don't sit me down for someone else. So I feel like he's going to try to end the season on a high, at least from a qualifying standpoint. So I've got a Bottas in P1, a Hamilton in P2, and a Max Verstappen in P3. Time wise, I think I'm going to be a little brave here. It sounds like we may all be. I'm going to go really, really bold here and go with a 126.989 is my time. So beating the track nice. Record here.
So James, who, like, as we've mentioned, is not here to do this. He's going with Hamilton in P1, Bottas P2, Max Verstappen in P3. His lap time is a little on the quick side, but not necessarily as quick as yours. He's at a 127.666. For me, I got to ride the chalk thing. Basically, I said this is what I was going to do for the rest of the year, so I might as well just keep that going. Hamilton P1, Bottas P2, Max Verstappen P3. I think this is a track where the abilities of the cars actually comes back out, so I think that's kind of where they all are. My lap time, it's pretty quick. It is going to be a track record, but I don't think it's as quick as you guys. I'm a little bit quicker than James. 127.221.
Yeah, it should be good. We've been close to 30 seconds off for the last couple of races. So
we should be within that 107% rule at least this week.
We should be.
Some support race where, you know, there's an oil slick or something that ends up on the track. And
or, you know, you get that sudden desert monsoon and it just floods the circuit. So who knows? That's always possible, right?
It's 2020. Anything is possible in 2020, man.
Exactly.
So for our race podium, John, who do you have?
Yeah, I'm going to go full chalk on this one. I think Hamilton I take it back. I'm not going to go quite full chalk. I'm going to mix it up just a smidge. I think Hamilton is going to be able to move up. I think we're going to have a good race between the two Mercedes drivers for a little bit, but I think through pit stop strategy and tire preservation, I think Hamilton is going to get the edge here. So I've got Hamilton in P1. Max Verstappen, I think he's due for a good day. It's been a rough couple of weeks for him, so I think he's looking to get back into the place that I think he naturally slots, which is P2, and I've got Valtteri Bottas in P3.
So James, he is going again full chalk on race prediction. He's got Hamilton P1, Bottas P2, Max Verstappen in P3. His lap time, his fastest lap time, is a 131.120, and he has that being set by Lewis Hamilton. I'm going to go slightly different. I think with the seventh championship wrapped up, I don't know what it is about the race right after he does that, but it tends to be, it's a natural, not let down, but it's a natural kind of, things just get kind of wild in that race. So I actually think this is one where a Valtteri Bottas can hold. If he gets track position, he's probably going to be able to hold it. So I've got him in P1, Max Verstappen. I think you're right. He's chopping at the bit. Probably going to take one. I do think he's going to probably take P2. And then Lewis Hamilton, I think he's going to have an off day for him. It's not an off day for most. So I still think P3 on the cards and a podium for him is definitely doable. So I've got Lewis Hamilton in P3. For fastest lap, I think it's going to probably come down to maybe Lewis throws on a set of soft tires. He hasn't really had a chance to do that this year, just to go out and pip that fast lap time. I've got it at a 131.879.
Yeah, my fast lap, I'm gonna go full chalk and in line with you guys as far as Hamilton goes. It's crazy. We're all going 2 to 3 seconds faster than last year, but I'm going with a Hamilton and a 130.893. It's about 2.5 seconds faster than last year. I'd be a little bold, but we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, that's kind of tended to be where these cars have gone when it's been normal conditions. You know, the one element we haven't talked about, believe it or not, that actually could play a huge role is the wind. You know, if
I
was going to say, if the wind is blowing in a certain direction, especially like behind the cars going into turn one, that could be a huge factor. You know, they might not be able to go down as fast, but if it's a headwind coming in an F1 car, an F1 car lives for headwind. It loves it. That's what it's designed to do, is cut through that. So be interesting to see what direction that plays throughout the weekend. So something to watch.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much our end of the rundown. Just want to let you guys know, it's kind of back to normal service in terms of practice times and race times. 8:10 central for the race. So no super early. It should be daylight out around here when we actually watch the race. Qualifying will be on Saturday, will be 8 a.m. in the morning in the central time zone. Practice 3, 5 a.m. That's pretty normal. Practice 2, a little bit later in the day on Friday. And if you're fortunate enough to be off at work, feel free to catch it. It starts at 9 a.m. And if you're an early bird like me and have to watch all the practices because you just love F1, as I do, I'll be getting up. It's going to be a long day for me that Friday. That's hopefully furniture delivery day for me. So I'm hoping to have a whole lot of stuff going on, but I'm going to be bright up and early at 5 a.m. for practice 1.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a good weekend. Friday's probably after a lot of turkey tomorrow. Friday's getting up early. It's going to be a difficult one, but certainly going to do my best to make sure. I definitely will be up before FP2, probably with some coffee. We'll see if I make FP1. I don't know. It depends on how much food and alcohol I partake tomorrow.
Well, and here's the thing with FP1. I mean, it might be one of the more irrelevant sessions, because if it's out in the hot sun and then the sun goes down, you're not necessarily going to learn a whole lot. I know that there was talk of some FP1s going to some different drivers, but so keep your eye out for that. I'm not entirely sure of all of the details regarding that, because a lot of those announcements haven't been made just yet, at least as of tonight. Watch, they'll all come out tomorrow morning. You know, something else to keep your eyes on. You know, if you're into younger, less experienced drivers driving F1 cars and seeing how they do, FP1 may be the thing for you. It's been a lot of fun talking about this stuff, getting ready for this weekend. I am super excited for everything that this first race has to offer. John, any final thoughts?
No, nah, man, looking forward to it. And check us back Sunday night, Monday morning, whatever your time zone in, for the race review. So we've got some cool stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks. Got, I think, another guest coming on as well. So in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's going to be a good close of the season for the Outlap F1 for sure.
Yeah, and this is our triple header. So it's back-to-back-to-back race weekends for us. We're super excited about it, and we're always happy to bring it to you. And as always, if you're going to have laps, may them all be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlap F1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.